General Nimril 7, one of the first activities I noticed from your book you were engaged in after you got to France was during the first Battle of Ypres, when you were given the task of erecting French wire in front of the British trenches. Mm. What was French wire? Why was it called French wire? And how did you use it in fortifying trenches?
It's called French wire because it was designed by the French, and we got supplies of it when we first went over there from French engineers, military engineers, and the wire consisted of coils which closed up about 3 foot in diameter, and when stretched out, one coil would stretch out to about 7 or 8 yards in length, and you pegged it down with metal pegs so that it was pegged at intervals to the ground, and this thing formed an obstacle. And then you joined a lot of these end to end, and you could make a continuous obstacle with it, and then to make it more effective, you would stretch one or two strands of barbed wire along the top of it and wire them to the coils, and it made quite an effective obstacle. And the point is that it was very easily stretched out by night. If the German trenches were very close to yours, it might be almost impossible to put an ordinary barbed wire entanglement up, in which you have to hammer stakes in and then uncoil coils of barbed wire and stretch them out and all this sort of thing. And when the trenches are as close as they, some places they were, one place they were only 35 yards apart, Germans start with their machine guns and you just can't do anything. Mm-hmm. But these things, you peg down one end, you crawl along the ground, and you stretch it out, peg down the other end, and you've got an obstacle of sorts straight away. Mm. Then you set to again, and you can crawl along and stretch even one piece of barbed wire along the top. You've got an obstacle of sorts. So that's...
Yes. Now, after you stretched this French wire out, rather like a concertina, and staked it to the ground, how high an obstacle would it represent?
The coils, when closed, are about 3 foot in diameter. When stretched out, probably makes an obstacle about 2 foot 6 high.
I see. Now, would you always attach barbed wire to it?
If possible, but under conditions where the enemy trenches are very, very close, it might not be possible to put barbed wire. Mm. And even without the barbed wire, it is an obstacle which the enemy could not get through all there very easily.
Yes.
They would make a noise trying to do so and give you warning and be able to shoot.
Were there any particular problems for you, sappers, actually erecting wire entanglements of this kind? How difficult was it to actually do this work, and were there any particular problems or dangers attached to laying these kind of fortifications?
This French wire was the simplest, because you could put that out crawling along the ground, but to make a proper barbed wire entanglement with posts and everything is very hazardous, even at night time, when you're within range of the enemy.
Yeah.
So the front line work, it's very hazardous to try and put up a proper barbed wire entanglement anywhere within 300 or 400 yards of the enemy trenches.
Apart from barbed wire, could you give me an idea of what the fortifications were like generally at this period during First Ypres? How developed were they?
Oh, by the time of... By the time of the First Ypres, the trenches were very elaborate and where the ground was not waterlogged and so on. The front line trenches were 6 foot deep, with a firing step towards the enemy, which you stood on and fired, stood up to fire. But the main trench was 6 foot below the ground level, so that you got complete cover when you were walking along. And
even at this stage in 1914, they were developed that far, were they?
Oh yes, by the time of First deep, they'd been dug out to that sort of depth, mm-hmm. and every 10 yards there was a traverse, so that if a shell dropped into one length of trench, its effect was limited to that particular short length of trench. Mm-hmm.
I wondered whether, I mean, by this period, we're talking about, what, October 1914, when there was very little experience of trench warfare, I wondered whether the trenches were rather amateurish by comparison with what they became.
Oh, they very quickly developed. And mind you, the design of trenches was thoroughly well known from ancient siege warfare. And in the engineer training manuals, there were pictures of designs of trenches that had been used in the Indian Mutiny and so on, when attacking old fortresses. And so they was all known, the question of deep and elaborate trenches, it were well known. But so that within a month or 6 weeks of settling down anywhere, the shallow trenches first made could very soon, with a little hard work, be developed into these high-class siege trenches. Mm.
What were the main developments in trench construction during the course of the war from the kind you've just described as being used in 14?
Oh, there was nothing. The front line firing trenches remained like that. But what was developed further were elaborate dugouts, tunneled deeper still, and with timbered roofs, so that the troops could get undisturbed rest with a sentry. A sentry in each bay, keeping watch, and the men not on duty could be sheltered under practically shellproof dugout down below ground.
Do you think that the science of trench construction changed much as a result of experiences during the First World War, or were they really basically based on designs that were quite old and had been known about for a long time?
Oh, I think they developed as a result of the experience of the First War. The things like deep dugouts and so on, they developed enormously beyond what had been used before.
Mm. In what kind of ways?
Thinking these deep dugouts and so on, I don't think there had been such elaborate dugouts used in previous times.
Any other aspects which were new, apart from the point of the deep dugouts?
Gas protection, of course, that later on, that had to be developed. Mm.
How was that built into the trench?
Well, blankets and well-fitting. They had to have very, very carefully made entrances to a dugout, and blankets to fit over, and perhaps some timber fitment to keep the blanket in place. Mm. All that was developed when the scare of gas attacks came. Mm.
What about the reinforcing of trenches with concrete? How was concrete used in conjunction with the trench system later on?
Well, that was only possible in the further back areas. Mm.
It was never a feature of the front lines.
Oh, no, you couldn't do it. But it could only be done in making so-called more or less redoubts in the further back areas.
These were major strong points.
Yes.
Yes, I see. Apart from the work we've described so far that you were doing in this first period in France, can you give me some ideas about the other kind of work of the REs during this period? You've mentioned things like you had to cut barbed wire because at that stage of the war it couldn't be done by artillery fire. Could you tell me a bit more about that? The process of by which the REs would be responsible for clearing.
Oh, clearing well. Bangalore torpedoes was the method utilized for that. And that is a long, they were called Bangalore torpedoes because they were first invented in India by the Madras sappers and miners at Bangalore years before. And that comprised a Bangalore torpedo is a long, narrow plank of the necessary length to slide under the wire entanglements in front of German trenches, and on it slabs of gun cotton touching each other with a detonator at one end and a bit of fuse, and that's carried out and slipped under the wire entanglement at night and touched off the critical moment. The fuse is lit, and whoever's had to light it gets away in time and hides in a shell hole, gets back to his own frontline trench, and the thing and makes a decent sized gap in the wire entanglement.
So torpedo is a bit of a misnomer for it, really, isn't it? I mean,
yes.
As compared with a naval torpedo,
it's not really that kind
of principle.
No, but it's simply because it's a long explosive thing.
Yes. Now, another thing you mentioned as being one of your duties at this period was that you had to dig new trenches across no man's land in order to connect captured trenches with our own.
Mm-hmm.
Could you tell me about what that kind of work involved?
Oh, well, that is merely making a communication trench. Whatever the distance between our front line trench and the German front line trench, you're merely digging a communication trench, just like between our front line trench and our support line trench. It's merely not a straight thing, a zigzag thing, so that you don't get it enfiladed by fire. And whatever depth you have time to do. I mean, the communication trench usually used to start with something about 3 foot deep, which you went along doubled up, and then gradually deepened till it's 5 or 6 foot deep, complete cover.
Mm. Was digging these kind of communication trenches always done by human muscle power, or was it ever mechanized in any way?
No, it was by human power.
Yes, good. Now, you also mentioned in your book that another of the jobs you had to do was to wire trenches against counterattack. Could you explain to me what the idea behind this was and how you carried it out?
Is that in reference to captured trenches? German trenches? Their wire is the wrong side of the trench for you. You then proceed to wire the trench to stop the Germans coming back again.
I see.